Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm Alexander Agunis, the No Direction's everyman gamer, and today I'm joined by the most intrepid Starfinder this side of the galaxy, James Ballard. Yeah, singular this time. We don't have V. Oh, I'm sorry. I cut you off.
No, you didn't at all. I was just gesticulating appreciation.
Awesome. So today, real talk, sit down. We had something different planned, and it didn't happen. So today we're going to technobabble, a lot of technobabble.
Yeah, with Galaxy Exploration Manual and Tech Revolutions, a lot of like lore and context has been written about what you'd expect out of the Starfinder, at least the core setting of it. And it's probably a good idea to expand in some of that because some stuff just isn't exactly as you'd think.
Yeah, you know, I can't tell you how many times I go on like the Facebook groups for Starfinder and people like say, oh, Starfinder has this. And I'm like, no, it really doesn't. And I don't mean to sound elitist. I'm sorry. But I'm going to absolutely sound elitist in this episode as I say all of these things about how technology works in Starfinder. All of this is stuff you can find in GEM and Tech Revolution. So if you want to tell me that I'm wrong or I said something wrong or, you know, you want to try to say that to James, he's impregnable. You can try, but it won't work. If you want to tell us that we're wrong, you can join our Discord and then be like, no, on page 107, it says everything you...
Yeah, yeah. And Alex, how many of those things you found out because you wrote the version of them that didn't include the thing you wanted?
In this book, none. I'm not an author in this book.
I know, but previous, some items, you know, items translate, you know, you still can use grappling hooks now that, you know, other books are out.
James just won't let me live Star Toss style down, really. He won't. James is like, wow, Alex, your swashbuckler in PF1 was so terrible, and then all of a sudden this book came out and you're doing like consistently 20 plus damage per per knife toss. How'd you do it? Oh, I wrote these options. I made it work.
The secret ingredient is nepotism.
That's okay, but I made up for it because that book also has Cut from the Air, which is like everybody's favorite feat apparently.
Yeah, Smash from the Air. Cut from the Air is fine. Smash from the Air saves you.
That's fair. Now, before we get too lost in the past, let's talk about the future. So technology in Starfinder is definitely more advanced than what we have in the real world. But I think there's also a lot of places where people assume that because it's like a far-flung future sci-fi setting, that it's got things that really...
Yeah, like for instance, in the Dead Sun's Adventure Path, you go to a planet that has... that's like post-tech fall by hundreds of years. And they're at about kind of Fallout level. And you would expect more based on some of the stories that you hear about them. And you get there and you're just like, wow, these people still just like drive to work in cars and like just take the bus and like go home to their families. There's advanced in different ways. And as part of Galaxy Exploration Manual, they kind of divvied that up. And Tech Revolutions expands upon that for more current like places you're actually more likely to visit, interact with long term.
You gotta be fair though. They may have only had cars and like normal cities, but the Kish absolutely had people sized microwaves.
That's only to get rid of your cancer or make it so you don't care about having cancer anymore. One of the two.
That's fair. While we're going through this, we have some people who are live in front of a Twitch audience. So all of our Twitch listeners, if you have any questions you want to ask, if you have any tech that you want us to talk about or touch on, anything you think is cool, weird, or interesting in the Starfinder universe when it comes to technology, leave the comments and we will absolutely shout out and add as much as we can to this because we definitely want to hear what you think. So James, what do you think? Should we start with... we could start with food because I know you're super into food. Food is great, by the way. I recommend it. And then we could also do the topic that for me is like super big is faster than light travel in Starfinder. Which one do you want to start with?
Let's start with faster than light. Let's jump in some weeds.
Oh gosh, you know that this makes me so angry. So one of the number one misconceptions I see about technology in Starfinder is like people are like, oh my gosh, you know, you're living a faster than light travel society. That's actually not true. There is no faster than light travel in Starfinder that mortals can access. If there is faster than light travel, it's like super powerful beings that, you know, have intense magical energy. Like from what we've seen so far, faster than light is relegated to magic, like, you know, the teleport spell. Instead you have drift travel, which is specifically using a technological drift engine to breach into another plane of existence. The drift, it is not faster than light. It's basically wormhole punching, but you are punching through another plane instead of punching like through folds in reality. reality, which is a very distinct difference, even though it looks pretty much the same. You are not getting places instantaneously. You know, it's not like, vroom, you know, you're moving light speed. It's actually honestly a good thing for you because light travels very, very fast, but light does not travel fast enough to reach, you know, I'm not really like, it's the theory of relativity exists for a reason, right? If, you know, if you are moving at the speed of light, time dilates. So like you experience time on that speck moving at light speed effectively slower than the rest of the world around you. Like if you're traveling X number of years as a speck of light, then back on, you know, Absalom Station, they might experience, you know, 6, 7, 10, 20 times as much time as you are. Like the longer you are traveling at the speed of light, the more time passes. This is a very, very, very simplified version of a very complex, like, physicist thing. So if you Google faster than light travel, if you want to learn more. But essentially, there is no faster than light travel in Starfinder, and that's a good thing for us, because if there was, you would not have Starfinder Society going in us.
Yeah, it would also make a lot of your encounters very terrible, because the speed that you'd have to achieve, like getting there, the acceleration would have to be limited so you don't just die. You can't just immediately start going that. So,
or I mean, like you would have to slow down like before you got there, which would actually increase the amount of time it took you to get to the place, if that makes sense.
And even to start going fast, because the acceleration also will just splat your body.
Yes, exactly. So it's a good thing you don't. That's an important idea, that there is no faster than light travel in Starfinder, because this kind of ties into how telecommunications work in Starfinder. Specifically, you cannot take a message and beam it faster than light and then have it get to a place instantaneously. I can't tell you how many times I read about people saying, oh, I pulled out my phone and I called my partner in the Vescarium. I'm on Absalom Station. It's like, no, that took you 3d6 days in the drift. like, first of all, you would need to have some kind of like a machine, right? A machine that like opens holes into the drift to let telecommunications travel in, and then hope that somehow they reach out of the drift into the right hole that you were going to. One of the things that the developers have said that Starfinder does is they have this idea of like a data bus, which is essentially a starship that takes data from the infospheres of planets and like travels around like almost like a SEPTA. In Pennsylvania, SEPTA is our bus line. But like it travels like a bus going from world to world and literally just stopping, like updating the infosphere with its data, gathering new data, and then going to the next place.
That also sounds like Google Earth's cars. Yeah.
That absolutely is Google Earth's cars. I made a SEPTA joke because
SEPTA would never get your information on time.
Oh my gosh, no, it would take like it would easily take months. But like, because information travels that slowly, you know, you're basically looking at like, if you want a message to go from, you know, Absalom Station to the Vescarium, then probably what you're looking at happening is like uploading a voice file or like a digital copy of your voice onto something and then having it go through the drift, you know, take that 1d6 days to the Vescarium, or I guess the Vescarium is probably more like 3d6 because I don't have a drift beacon as far as we at. So they're dropping it off, you know, get the new data, and then on a new bus comes back with a reply after like, you know, the time it took the reply to be made. And I'm sure that like the buses aren't going at every hour of the day. Like it's probably like, you know, all right, once a day we'll send out. Like you're gonna have a delay of at least a day, or at least probably 5 days in that case. That's like the best possible outcome. This actually mattered for us when I'm playing in Leo Glass's Fly Free or Die campaign, call it Fly Free or Pies, and we were trying to get like our like dispatcher's like opinion on something, and he's like, yeah, you can do that, it'll take you a couple hours because like the message has to go from Castrovel to Absalom Station, and that's not like solar systems away, but it's, you know, not instant either.
Yeah, and it depends on like what you're using to teleport, like transfer messages. Light is obviously your fastest, or most likely the fastest you have. But if you're using just like regular radio frequencies, it's going to take even longer.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that one of the things, like, you know, it's very true that like starships don't travel faster than light. They just travel large places because the drift is like can be accessed anywhere, but it's not a one-to-one ratio. Basically, the drift, okay? The drift is the Nether in Minecraft.
Yeah, because, or the warp in Warhammer 40K.
That's true. I was just thinking more like how the map for the Nether is smaller than the overworld map. So true. Like it corresponds on like a one block in the Nether is like seven blocks in the overworld or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so that's basically how it works. But it's important to keep that in mind because it means that anything that relies on things traveling quickly don't really move that fast. And you are like kind of left in a situation where, you know, if you are going out into deep space and like exploring the vast or whatever, like you are really at the wild west of civilization in Starfinder. And I think it's one of the reasons why you see so many wild west aesthetics in Starfinder, because you have this idea that you are on the cusp of moving beyond what is easily accessible going to and fro, like from your location to a place where there is a established government and society. Mm-hmm. Which is really cool and interesting, but it's something that like gets overlooked often for the ease of just saying, oh, bing, get a message.
There's a human fan fiction like on the HFY subreddit that goes about how to do travel and communications over long distances and secure. And it's literally just launching people through their equivalent of the Drift or wormholes.
I mean, that's what you got to do.
Yeah. I mean, I was actually just double checking because magic is one of those things that it can do things that tech can't. And I was just looking. I don't think there's a first party just sending spell in Starfinder unless I'm overlooking something.
I think there's message, but I think message only exists because you can give someone a message without like alerting people. I think you're right. I don't think there is sending, which is, to me, is a little bit weird because I feel like sending has the advantage of like you send someone a message and they can get that message without needing to obviously pull a phone out at it. Like
and they get to give a reply.
Yeah. It's just a free reply any way you want. So definitely put that spell back in the game, Starfinder devs. Galactic Magic was supposed to come out this month, but it's coming out next month, apparently. So maybe we'll see sending back then.
Yeah, I mean, it's in Pathfinder, it's a relatively high-level spell. It is something relatively hard to do, but I mean, you also have intergalactic teleportation as a spell. Yep. So like, there's probably room for it.
I think so. I think you'd probably just want to make it like a third or fourth level spell in Starfinder, but
yeah. So maybe you have like a mini version and then you tier it up for a higher version, just like you do other spells.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I just read your channel note about Abadar Comcast. I don't think I can handle that.
I can't fight Comcast already. That's no, too evil.
Well, I think if Comcast was going to be owned by a god, it'd probably be Asmodeus. Just because, because Abadar, at least at the very least, talks about how like when you give someone a service, you give them the service they asked for, and to like basically break the terms of a contract is like really bad. And I feel like Comcast like throttling people's bandwidth and stuff would definitely qualify for like an Asmodean, you know, twisting of
terms and services,
right? Yeah. Like, that's just what I think. I'm actually really hoping Asmodeus gets a write-up in Galactic Magic. There's supposed to be a whole bunch of gods in it. And I think he would be one. He's one I really want to see what Asmodeus in, like, Starfinder.
He has the potential to be such a cool base to play off of. It's weird because the things in his realm really kind of cater to, like, the Doom fantasy, like, of the, you know, video game. But, like, his reputation is kind of different.
Well, you know that there's a Starfinder adventure path that takes place in hell that's coming, right? That's on their product page. And you know that it was written by No Directions, Jessica Redica, right?
you don't just make infernal landing castles that are where three of them are called an invasion and not have an adventure path for them.
I agree. Yes, please do. just let the devils go and just be like, good stuff. I headcanon, Galarian is gone because Space Chelia. They're like, we could do this, but they're just too evil. They conquered everybody. Goodbye, Space Chelia.
GG go next round.
Now, speaking of GG go next, you ready to talk about food?
Yeah, I was looking through, I didn't start initially looking at food, but going through the biotechnology, they talk about manufacturing, like food at the table, for instance. And there's an earlier references to turning UPBs into food, which on like an on a gustatorial level is disgusting.
Absolutely. That's my fault. I'm so sorry. I wrote the culinary synthesizer in Armory, and I basically said to my developer at the time, I was like, look, you may not like that I wrote this. It may be disgusting, the thought of turning plastics into food, but canonically in your core rulebook, it says you can use UPBs to craft anything.
Yeah, it's as dumb as it is. If you were to have the ability, you could turn petroleum into food. People do. I think you get synthesized vanilla. You can get that from petroleum products. So like it's just gross. Like just it makes your stomach turn. But as far as making food from that, there's kind of the Demolition Man fantasy where you don't see a lot of meat because either you kind of realize the inhumanity of it and have as a society stepped up not to, or it's just too expensive to produce or sell except for very rich people. They make three different references basically to artificial meat, whether by growing it by biotech, by using UPBs, and there's specifically a section into making it, I believe, by plants, calling tree meat. But in general, it's actually pretty rare. Usually you just do meat substitutes and not just figuring weird ways to make meat from other things, which threw me for a loop. I'll admit.
I mean, there's like, in the section of the book, they talk about like a lot of crazy foods, like, a pound of Defrax jerky? Like those things are horrific predators on vests and we're just eating jerky of them. It's like, okay, cool.
I mean, I've eaten jerky of animals like crocodiles and stuff. And you know, you can eat any meat. You just have to be brave enough.
I guess, you know, the ultimate like show of a technologically advanced civilization is being able to do things that would absolutely win a fair fight.
I think that is a tier one or two. I think when you get to like tier three, they talk about growing food at the table, like having a sit down meal where somebody grows like a puffball mushroom in front of you or like a king oyster mushroom and like slices that to serve at a table after like some preparation. Like there's so many interesting things that you could do with that from like a high gourmand aesthetic that I think that's really cool and probably deserves some exploring, probably more in fiction than in mechanics.
Definitely. One of the things I think is really cool is that in the food technology section of the Revolution, like they go out of their way to talk about the fact that like, yeah, you can 3D print food, but like everybody knows that like real food is better. Like
actually one of the mini stories, I believe in Verses, there's an augmented who feels like they're being judged by one of the, what do they call them? The peers, the one that don't have the augmentations. And the augmented is just there going, well, you have a vending machine sandwich in your mouth and that's made from UPBs. What's the difference?
Yeah.
So that attitude definitely exists in Starfinder. So.
Absolutely. In general, I think that food preparation and creation is like, it's one of those things that settings never really like talk about. Like I'm still waiting for like the Almanac Guide to Galarian for Pathfinder, where like they tell me about like who's making all the wheat that all these people and who's making all this food. Cause like, I don't know where food comes from in Galarian for the most part.
I have written articles about that. If we ever get those archives up about where people are getting base commodities like, with an apocalypse every 3 years, how do you have any sort of base for agriculture, farming, processing, or distribution?
Every 3 years, it's like every 6 months. like the adventure paths canonically take place in the month they're released. like if you ever look, like the year in Galarian is 47 and then the last two digits of RU. So like when like the any adventure path that happens always canonically takes place in the year it was published. So like if an adventure path is published in 2019, that it would be 4719 in Galarian when it happens. Like you could do that for all of them. Like, and it's to the point where like I know that you're not a second edition fan, but in the Lost Omens World Guide, they even put out like a record of events for all the adventure paths that came out in first edition.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think it was in the core rulebook too.
And you can see that like there's a point where it's like the world wound gets really bad. And also the Iron God starts coming out of the mount while the Whispering Way is almost done breaking out. Like it's crazy. And then like in Lost Omens Legend, I don't remember which NPC it is, but like someone writes a letter and comments about the fact how an apocalypse seems to start every other day on Galarian.
Well, there's not a very long gap between Warforged. Oh, I'm sorry. I wonder why not.
Oh. No. those of you who are watching live, you get to see tech issue.
It's you should be able. It says
so while James is figuring out how to fix his sound. Yes, an apocalypse happens all the time. That kind of happens in Starfinder too. But it's very interesting that you're not really going to see that with... No, I still can't hear. Mm-hmm. Is you're not really going to see that anymore quite as much because they're moving to a bi-monthly... oh, you can hear James? Oh my gosh, it's me.
Yeah.
Oh no, I'm the problem. I can hear you now. I just, yeah. my headset turned itself off apparently. I'm so sorry, James. That's my fault.
Yeah, I was looking over my settings. I'm like, it says I'm transmitting. Everything's up to date. I'm waiting for chat.
Thank you. Even in chat, they're saying, Alex, you're crazy. We can hear James. Like, oh no.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, there's a point canonically where War for the Crown takes place not too long after Reign of Winter. Two things that completely blight crop and like food distribution for entire swaths of Avastan.
Right. I mean, because mild spoiler for Reign of Winter, if you don't want to hear this very mild book one spoiler that you learned in the first
paragraph,
seconds, literally the first paragraph, you could skip ahead. But essentially in Reign of Winter, it starts off, the players off in a tavern in Tal'Dorei when a blizzard comes in. That's why the adventure path is called Snow. And it's like, okay, well, you just destroyed all the crops for that year. and then like Tal'Dorei, like James said, goes on warp. But, you know, fun stuff.
Yeah. So food availability is always a variable, and it is hard to parse that into such a kitchen sink setting. Yeah. Usually you have to go into individual areas to kind of get more of a feel, but it would be a fun side project. I don't know if anybody ever has time for a side project, but.
Oh my gosh. Who has time for a side prod? Not right now. life's been hard. Anyway, another thing that to me is like a thing that technology people don't really get for Starfinder is like this idea that like universal translators don't exist in Starfinder. You can't just like put a headset on and be like, I perfectly understand everything that you are saying now, like in Star Trek, especially for like languages you've never heard of. You need magic, like comprehend languages and tongues still exist because tech can't do that. Good.
Yeah, it's even now we have great translation stuff in general. It's like using Google Translate on your phone, it will get you on a map. You know, it will tell you what something is. It won't tell you any good conversational details. And Starfinder kind of continues that legacy of imperfect translation.
Yeah, yeah. Like you can get certain cybernetic augmentations plugged in your brain, but they are temporary. Like they won't permanently give you the language, and it's usually an imperfect translation. Then you know you're also for the most part like it's just a place where you are generally looking at you magic. Like there are some different items. Like there's the Envoy's mouthpiece, which is like a short term translating for like limited or for only two languages at a time because you have to program the entire lexicon and do something that can fit the size of a headphone, which you know ultimately it creates a situation, and like that doesn't even change the fact that like a translator isn't going to do anything for somebody who's a sign language, like if you're going to the Vlaka, like
yeah, also there's a reason why if you use translation services like at work they call themselves interpreters.
Yeah, because you know there's nuance that a machine can't pick up. And, you know, our language is super complicated. Like if I said to James, you know, yeah, sure. Or yeah, sure. A computer is going to pick up both of those and think they're the same. And Starfinder tech really can't do that. Really can't. So that's a really important thing to keep in mind when you're building your, you know, Starfinder campaign setting. Because I like to me, that's one of the ones that my players, when I run Teach Wasteland, they're always like, well, can't we just pull out our phone? No. No.
Yeah, it tells you to make a left at Chestnut Street and then Stinky Breath Feet Cheese. You're like, what?
I mean, like, how many, obviously I can't speak for everybody who the show, but James and I live in Philadelphia where a huge number of the street names and place names are named after things from other languages. We are such a club, so many, like, yeah. So it's not going to work. You can't.
I need to just put this in now, text to speech for Schuylkill.
Oh my gosh. Do it. I don't even know what language Schuylkill is from.
It's a Lenape. I think it's Lenin Lenape or whatever language they spoke.
I believe it. Like 100%, but like it's just the school, you know. That's just what they call it.
Yeah, same thing with Wawa, also a Lenape word. It's every convenience store around here, pretty much.
Yeah, essentially. Now, one of the things that Tech Revolution touches on, and I know that Gem does as well too, that I think is very interesting for a setting that people don't talk about enough is energy production. Because like, you need energy to make literally everything in a modern society work. Like, you know, base mechanics, if you're firing a laser gun, you need energy to charge base. So good.
Yeah, and it goes back. I mean, even if you're at like a place of the Stone Age society, they're probably getting to the point where they're using water wheels to grind grain or helping them move things, because it energy is everywhere.
Yeah. I like that it takes the time to remind us that Starfinder is advanced, but it's also like fantasy. Because like, one of the things they talk about is the Starstone reactor on station. And it's like, yeah, it's a reactor that converts the Starstone's magic into power. And I'm like, that's super cool. Also, completely not a viable energy solution for the modern day. But it's super cool.
I don't know. Converting spell slots into magic seems pretty good if you're not using those spell slots.
I mean, does anybody use spell slots in Starfinder? The Galactic Magic's not out.
I mean, use it for Junk Sword and...
That's true. The ability that you throw the spell slots into the stagger, that paradigm shift.
The one that they nerfed. Yeah, that one.
Those are the two things. Oh, and then I guess maybe Mystic Cure. I think I've seen Mike Barnett use Mystic Cure a few times in Chapel.
Yeah. Your spell slots could do a lot for you. But also they can run a reactor. And those are equally valid uses. Summon monster. I will ask for summon monsters. Very useful.
My favorite thing is still you throwing an endless volley of summon monsters at a sniper so that they don't snipe people.
That's the scenario's fault for putting you on an actual shooting range that is hundreds of feet long. I needed something.
It's really funny because you read the reviews for that scenario and like everybody complains about being put on a killing field with nothing really to do other than to run at the gunner. And James is like, well, if I have a round peg and a square hole, my round peg will fit into the square hole.
If we were like one level earlier, I would not have been able to summon multiple of them, and that would have just torpedoed that plan.
No, it was legit. As the GM who ran that scenario for you, it was great. I loved it. Very good. Then, you know, on top of like doing magic and stuff, it also takes the time to like, you know, talk about other ways that you energy comes from. Like one of the things that I appreciated, which I wasn't sure if they were going to do, was have a paragraph on nuclear reactors and nuclear energy, because, you know, like in the real world, nuclear energy gets a bad rep because, you know, we've had lots of accidents and lots of mishaps, nuclear power, especially compared to some of the things that have happened to power. I think nuclear energy is scary in the real world. And to have it be presented as like a viable energy source in the future is good. Now, I mean, they note that it's bulky and expensive, but, you know, it's cool. You know, it works. It generates lots of energy, but it's risky.
Yeah. And I think also the inclusion of combustion plants is very pragmatic. Even on higher places, because this is an actual issue that you're running into power systems now where you do have green alternatives, but the power that they give isn't consistent throughout the day and you need to match demands, and combustion plants are kind of the easiest way to get that done. Because even in changing the capacity for things like nuclear plants or geothermal plants, it just takes long. And that can't meet the same surges.
Yeah. And I think the other interesting thing is like a lot of the natural energies, like they're not consistent for every place, and some places make more energy than needed. So one of the things I talk about is there's a section on power distribution, because like, you know, in the real world, one of the
I miss that section?
Yeah, it's the last paragraph.
My God, I have to read this and yell at it. Hold on.
Okay, you take a minute to read at it, and I'll continue to talk to Chet.
Sure.
So, like, you know, in the real world, how energy works is that different places, like especially for solar energy, different places have access to different renewable resource generation, energy generation. So, like, you know, in a place that's very windy, like on a mountain, you get a lot of wind energy. The air is naturally over there to spin the turbines to generate electricity. Whereas, you know, down in like a desert where it is, you know, closer to the equator, which means more sunlight, you generate lots of solar energy. You read all the time about places in the world that use these resource-driven energy production models, and they have more energy than they actually use in their system. And so one of the come up with is, well, how do we distribute energy to the places that don't have that? James and I live in Pennsylvania, which isn't high enough elevation for strong, you know, wind turbine, or at least in Philadelphia, and it's too high from the equator to have consistent solar generation. Like where we're at right now in the winter, it's getting dark at like 4:30, 5:30 if you don't daylight savings time. So that limits the usefulness of those energy and power distribution if you're going to rely on these cleaner energies. Absolutely, society would really need to take into consideration.
Yeah. So the reason why I always have some issues is I did write a how many years is this? I did write Code Switch at one point. I always start off shows with saying that, but I actually did. I can't find the date. I wrote an article specifically about the power capacity of batteries in Starfinder and how they're actually ludicrous. If you had the ability to move things correctly, like move batteries to places, you could power things for literal months and years.
Yeah.
Just by how powerful laser guns are in this future, just basing it off of that. It is ridiculous amounts of power.
I think it even says battery storage is critical for decentralized power since energy production isn't constant. And like that's even implying that you can get major power needs out of a rig, which actually I think has really interesting implications for a setting. Like if you can, I know that you wrote this in your article, but I mean, like, isn't it something crazy? Like you could get, you just said it, it was like a month of power out of like one battery for like an entire city, your calculation.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I'm going to look at it a little more carefully, but it with how many batteries you honestly have in an area. Yeah.
And I mean, they are so easily like generated. Like they're so easy to make.
Yeah, here we go. So a laser pistol using the cheapest Starfinder battery would be able to hold 4,420 kilowatt hours, which is enough to power a U.S. home for 5 months.
Oh my gosh.
That's that's where you're hitting a bottleneck with a lot of rechargeables and renewables in our current power ecosystem is you can only make batteries so big and so efficient with lifespans. That's why you do things like pump water up atop of a reservoir and then during peak power demands, let it go down to move it so you can maximize the cost of power. You pump it up when it's cheap, put it down when it's expensive. With batteries being this affordable and this power dense, you could power starships off of this thing, off of like your gun batteries.
Interesting. You know, it makes you wonder what the power and the power.
It's one of those things where I think I just screamed to the sky and everyone, that doesn't make sense because I don't want it to make sense. So it doesn't make sense because it's really lame to have a laser gun that doesn't shoot anything, which spoiler, laser guns in Starfinder kind of suck anyway.
Are you still mad about dust?
Yes, I'm still mad about dust. This is the future. How do you have an effective laser weapon that's like, smoke is scaly? That's not an effective laser weapon.
Wait. Does your anthropomorphization of the concept of laser guns use a boo-boo voice?
When it can't get through basic smoke? Yes. When there's particulate debris? Yes. Like, oh my God. When they can't hit invisible people? Yes.
Oh no, that laser beam is coming right for me. Reaction invisibility. I'm immune to your guns now. Oh gosh, it's the laser assault dragon's greatest nemesis, one invisible person.
And lava being a chat, yes, using your battery as a catalyst for explosive blasts should make it like a small thermonuclear detonation. It should be horrifying.
I mean, technically you can do that as a technomancer, but the damage is definitely not a thermonuclear detonation. It's like 96.
It's not nearly as good.
So yeah. Clearly the moral of the story is detonate your batteries and also power your homes with their 5 minutes. So in addition to things that are like super cool and high tech, one of the things that this tech revolution talks about that I think is a really interesting thing that I don't really see a lot of people thinking about, like, I feel like Starfinder did this in the second adventure and a little bit with Akaton, but it's the concept of obsolete technology.
Huh.
Yeah, there's an entire section on like, hey, you know, tech has existed that we don't use it anymore. And I think that having like lists of technology that is that progressively get out of date over time, but like you have that advance is cool and interesting. In Teenage Wasteland, I was doing a role play session with Dustin, and I described something that one of his ancestors had seen. Like he did a vision where like he got to see like what his dad was doing or something. And he's like, my dad had cell phones. I'm like, yeah, that was only 60 years ago. Cell phones existed in Starfinder. They look different, but they existed. Like I was like, you know, 1,000 years ago they had starships, right? Like, they were like Earth starships like now, but they were still there. And so I think that's one of those things that for Starfinder a lot, because we take our understanding of what our own past looks like and we try to apply it to Starfinder because Starfinder is a game that uses a lot of modern concepts, but like this is one of those places where that doesn't work. Like, you know, 300 years ago when the gap first ended, like there were starships, you know, we know this. The drift beacon went out. It wasn't like Triune sent entire ship schematic. She's like, nah, here, have this engine, plug this, you know, just hot plug this into your star hot rod and you'll be good.
Yeah, I did also got up talking about the power of a fireball. I think a fireball, if I look at the article here correctly, had enough power, the equivalent of 72 kilowatts, which is enough to power a home for a day and a half. So a battery is like 30 times more energy dense than an explosive blast spell.
So what you're telling me is the next time I play a Technomancer in Robin's campaign, I need to ask her if my explosive blast spell can do 270.
Yes, they're basically explosive blast is obsolete. We're just blowing up batteries of people's faces now. This is the new tech.
Oh no. Oh no.
What a terrible meta, just throwing batteries at people.
We've destroyed the fantasy of Starfighter and replaced it with a meat battery.
And obviously taking something we exist with today. My wife got a MRI and it's on a CD, which is a perfectly legitimate file format. It keeps for a while. It's relatively usable. We can't look at it. It could just be a rip roll on that CD for all we know.
Because nobody makes drives for them. Like my computer, I think has a CD drive. I think so. Like I think that, yeah, I think that's a drive on it, but like I can't tell you the last time my dad uses CDs for his music, I guess, but like
yeah, we have a boombox downstairs that has a CD player. I haven't built CD drives in my computer in the last two computers. I think I bought an external one that I can't find, but it's just like this is an adequate technology for what it is, which is medical imaging, which offices have the ability to use anyway. So it's obsolete to us because a CD is kind of obsolete unless you live in a place that doesn't have streaming access or MP3 players. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they still can be functional. So it is totally a relative term, like Lava Bean was saying in chat.
So one of the things that I thought was really interesting is that like the section on obsolete technology actually talks specifically about physical and physical and digital media forms and about how they're constantly evolving. Talking about, you know, different, there used to be like a ketone, which is now like hollow, like there's a whole bunch of like techno babble. This is why the episode is called Techno, by the way, because I could just sit here and read some of these things out at you. And it sounds like I'm an episode of Star Trek just making stuff up. But, you know, you just have this idea that like things have been improving over time. You have like cross compatibility. It's a really interesting read, even if it's kind of not, it doesn't matter a whole lot, like unless you're really doing like, oh man, you went into this base and you found the data you wanted. Too bad it's on this like MP3 player. You can't actually.
I feel that. I have like a first generation MP3 player that holds exactly 13 songs somewhere in this house, and I was looking for it. All gone.
You know what? When I was a kid, when we got our very first computer, it was probably in like 2000. It was like one of my dad's friends who had like a computer that he was just getting rid of, gave it to my dad. And he was like, here, you can type stuff, I guess. I was like, oh, this is great. And like, so literally you could do two things with this computer. And my brother, my sister and I, we would take turns doing this all day. Because this is for any Zoomers who are watching, this is the experience of a millennial child being in like the change of the relatively low tech world to the age. Like we would just sit in front of the computers, type on it, press the button to print and watch it print with amazement. Because before that, my mother had always used a typewriter. Like she had to do it. And then my dad came home with like floppy disks and we would just type stuff and save it to the floppy disks and then write what was on the floppy disk and then just check the floppy disk later to make sure it was still there. Like, because it was like, whoa, I can save this. And now like, you know, 20 years later, I'm sitting here on my computer that has the sum of human knowledge on it. Every game I've ever wanted, I contact people across the world. And like the level of progress, I think for us in our world is crazy. And it's really cool to see this article where they do the same thing in Starfinder, saying like, you know, the march of progress is now, you know, running like a Barry Allen over here.
God, I remember the old codec days. Those were terrible. Having to download like four different codecs for a movie trailer.
Do you remember the AOL sound?
You know, I at least kind of think of that fondly in some ways.
it's like SpongeBob victory screeching.
Exactly. Actually, my mom's reason for not getting a computer was we had an electric typewriter that was perfectly fine and we still had ribbons for.
You know what? We actually just got our first question for the entire show. It's from Heroic Failure. And Heroic Failure asks, do anti-vaxxers still exist in Starfinder?
Yes.
I have to say they probably do. Yeah. Like, I think it's a case of like Fallout where just things never change. Kitsune Warlock, who is No Direction's Dustin Knight, says it's Urgothoans. I mean, you're not wrong.
Yeah, or if you lived in a place where all your medical technology suddenly rose up and killed it, you'd probably be really afraid of, like microwaves that either cure your cancer or kill your kids, you know? I wouldn't take medicine from those people.
I think this scenario came out right around the time that your daughter was born. Mm-hmm. But there was a scenario where, like, one of the seasons of Starfinder scenario of society was really based around this idea that someone was fixing medicinal prices. And, you know, in the real world, the justification was that the Starfinder team heard from feedback that medicinal too expensive. And they mm-hmm. wanted to come up with an in-universe reason why they were going to nerf all the prices. So mm-hmm. they came up with this plot where big farm was essentially fixing prices. And there's like an entire scenario where like you go in with like medicine and you have to convince all of these anti-vaxxers to take the medicine to avoid the horrible disease that's killing their entire population. It's pretty great. Descriptivist says every season of Starfinder Society is based. Yeah, it is. Starfinder Society is great.
I really wish I could get to play more. It's just my schedule just doesn't allow it right now.
That's okay. That means that when your schedule does allow it, there'll be a giant never-ending backlog that we'll never get.
I feel like I'm going to end up just reading all the things.
I mean, I say we'll never get to, but like we may average like an adventure path. Or
yeah, potentially.
I more like an adventure path every 2 years.
I mean, yes, that, yeah.
Although you did Rapanathic too, so you did basically.
Yeah, I usually finish between 2 and 3 adventure paths in a year at this rate.
Oh my God. I can't even imagine how you do
that. Gritted teeth and just yelling at the rest of my party. What are you adult children doing? We have to do the right thing.
I'm so surprised you haven't given up and just joined the madness.
Who says I never have? I just have my eyes on the goal.
I've seen Joseph Luke. He's like my favorite one of your characters.
Every character I end up just ends up being like a slightly upset group dad threatening to turn the car around.
That's okay. That's not bad.
That's just my personality.
Yeah. My current character is just like, I'm just going to sit here and watch and enjoy the show. And if I have something I want to add or say, I'm going to do it. But yeah. Like our last big confrontation with that wizard, I literally just sat in Fox form and had James's character hold me for the entire time.
Yeah.
I mean, it was also because like I was technically Gias to not be in that place and I wasn't feeling too, but
yeah. I mean, you're kind of the opposite in Attack of the Swarm.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. No, listen, my Attack of the Storm character is amazing. I love my Attack of the Storm.
It's a great character. It's very aggressive.
listen, it's not his fault that he was born a raptor who's also a doctor. So maybe that's a good segue to talk about medicine in Starfinder.
Yeah, I think it is both overwhelming and underwhelming.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like I said, it's a little bit less costly now, which is a good thing. It also really buffs the biohacker because like a lot of medicines are things that I want to shoot into people to debuff because mm-hmm. when you get a medicine inside someone, they just get affected by the medicine with no save. There's some really nasty ones. There's one where you can just inject someone with like anesthesia and it just does non-lethal damage. It puts them to sleep forever. And then there's another one that like you hit them and they become flat-footed for like a number of rounds equal to the medicine's tier. So you're like, oh, well, I'm just going to inject you with this and now everybody is going to hit you.
It's a beatdown party. Everybody's invited.
But my favorite thing about the medicine section in Tech Revolution is like, rather than focusing on the medicinals you take, it talks about the medical technologies and like mm-hmm. hospital visits. This is very important to me because in James's Dead Son campaign, I spent like literally 2 weeks in the hospital.
The boy just had too many worms filled to the brim.
Listen, the thing is like if that wasn't the first adventure path we ever played and like we actually knew how the disease rules worked, I would have died. Like I had failed enough saving throws. I was definitely should have been at the dead track. And like we all just sat there like reading the rules and we're like, James, are you gonna just kill Alex? He's like, not this time.
Not this time, but you're gonna get a very embarrassing story, worm boy.
Look, the worms was one of two stories that Shoku never lived down. It was the worms and it was being put into the microwave.
that, that poor little fight boy, he just did his best and people just kept trolling him. So yeah, party no less.
But you know what? He got a lot of them back. Do you remember that one fight where I had like eight guys around me and I was like, whirlwind? And then it was like, wow. He actually whirlwind.
He actually used that feat that nobody ever uses. And it was effective. Wow.
He spun to wind. And he won.
Don't undervalue cleave in Starfinder. It's actually pretty good.
No, you gotta cleave all the things. It's super good. Just because you're so much more limited in number of attacks you can start. But one of the things that's interesting is they talk about how virtual intelligences, VIs, work for medicine. And like, you know, they're like, oh, well, you know, we can assist you. We can scan your body. We can use software for mental wellness applications to give counseling from a computer, which is both amazing. Terrifying, like as somebody who works in a mental health service field, I'm like, oh, I can be replaced by technology.
there is also the about augmentations where unscrupulous employers just implant worms that secrete chemicals to make you feel good regardless of your own feeling on the matter, which
oh my gosh, that's one of my, it's super scary, but like also I could absolutely see some of the different cultures in Starfinder doing that. I could absolutely buy that. Like if you told me that there were people in the Starfinder universe who bioengineered things to make me think I was feeling good when I actually was not, I'd believe that exists.
Yeah, but the second you learn about the existence of the things, you're like, well, why have I been so happy?
Oh my God, am I supposed to be feeling this good? That pain in my spleen is gone. Is it actually rupturing?
In 40K, there's a similar thing which kind of does the opposite called the butcher's nails that they put in gladiators that made them go crazy. So that's how you get Angron. Don't do that. Let people feel their feels.
I like how it mentions that there's technology that can literally bring back the dead if you're fast enough. It's like, yeah, it's fine. The brain functioning hasn't stopped too long. Not too many of those cells. You got this.
Yeah, that's always a big thing. Any like stop of blood flow to the brain is bad for you long term in the real, though.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think one of the things that's interesting about Starfinder is like the fact that the mnemonic editor exists and specifically says it can basically rebuild like synapses and neural pathways implies that like in the world of Starfinder, we've like neuromapped the brain well enough to understand how it works and how to like alter it and make memories, which is something we absolutely cannot do. Like when people talk about how they're going to upload their brains to a computer, we don't actually know how cognition works. Like nobody does. It, like it's all like what I do for my field. It's basically like it is scientific trial and error. Like and that's essentially all. Like, oh well, let's try this. Let's try that. You know that these are the processes by which we've observed learning happens. We know that when you do this, this outcome will happen. You know, most of the time for the majority of people, but we don't actually understand why that happens or how that information is stored. Because like the best we know is that like information isn't encrypted on cells the way that like information is encrypted on data chips. So like the fact that you could do that has huge ramifications for like the mental health, which this doesn't really talk about, but it's really interesting.
Yeah, because I think anything that they wrote would immediately seem out of date and potentially damaging years later down the line, you know?
Oh, absolutely. When we actually figure out how the brain works at some point, they're definitely risking.
Yeah, there's some idea that like all of your things like memory and cognition are based off of like neural activations, and basically that activation is that memory or ability to find that memory, and they build off of each other in a vast web. It's super cool and interesting. Good luck ever figuring that out. They figured out the human genome though, so you know.
I feel like eventually humans will figure out how cognition works, but it's definitely one of those things that we can't even fathom right now. Like we know that it exists. We know that there are biological processes that somehow make cognition happen. We cannot replicate it.
Do you ever worry that if you figure out exactly how cognition works, you just realize how futile everything is and fragile is, and then you just like don't want to think about it anymore? Like everybody that's ever figured out went, huh, maybe people shouldn't know that.
To be completely real, at the point where we figure out how cognition works and can artificially create memories and skills, at what point does the human experience cease to matter because we edit it? It's like the effect of like putting cheat codes into The Sims. like
Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, or Grand Theft Auto. It's like at some point the actual experience, like, because you know, you always hear from people that life is a journey, and you know, like it's the journey you made along the way, not the end result of dying, that what defines life. But if you can just write your experiences, your emotions, your cognitions, your memories, does that journey have value? That is a really interesting question. Wow. That'd be a really interesting like story to actually tackle.
Yeah. I mean, you do have things like The Matrix and Blade Runner as kind of ideas of that. I know you see Transhuman there, which is a good idea. Is it this Evangelion? Everything's Evangelion. Evangelion is what you want it to be at the time that you're watching it. Yes. That's all Evangelion is.
Heroic Failure also says you could study the human brain if you put 10,000 of them into a virtual reality game and don't let them.
Okay. Okay. That's just the plot of Sword Art Online. Let's not do that.
Oh, wait. Is that actually the plot of Sword Art Online? Because my experience is through the Abridged series, where like he just wanted to avoid getting sued.
No. It wasn't the sued part, but it was just an experiment in the ultimate game and yada yada. It's nonsense. It's not. It was somebody's first effort that was one of the first things in its field, so it seemed cool at the time. Yeah. Well, but they were stuck logged in. Yeah. I mean, except for the people that died when they tried to unplug their headsets and move them to hospitals.
Oh, yeah. So like I vaguely remember that from the Abridged series. They kept that plot point because it was crazy.
Yeah.
Speaking of crazy, it's 9:55 on our time, which means we're about ready to wrap up this show.
Yeah, we hit an hour. Congratulations, Alex. I thought we had like 35-40 minutes out of that.
Gosh, well, I think we're just like so absolutely charming and very humble.
We're the most humble.
There's no one in No Direction that's more humble than James and I, that's for sure. So in the meantime, James, where can people find us if they actually want to like listen to us talk?
Well, we hang out at the No Direction Discord. That's probably the easiest place to find us. Also, nodirection.com.
Yeah. Also our houses, but don't come here.
If allowed. You come to my house, I will call the cops. None of you are invited right now.
Yes, that's very true. I actually have like a manga to return to James that I haven't for 2 years because I'm not invited due to COVID.
Yeah. One day we'll get out of that. One day. Yeah.
I missed my chance. You invited me over for a party and I forgot to bring it.
Yeah.
I had one chance to give you your book back and I didn't.
I know. I'm trying to get another axe throwing competition going. We'll see. Maybe it's in spring.
That was so great. I wish I did better because like I won and got to like the quarterfinals and then just whiffed.
Yo, I was a jobber. I got through the first two rounds amazingly and then I laid a goose egg. We need more double eliminations. I need Tom to get up a bracket.
Yeah, agreed.
That might be bonus content. Who knows?
Just get a video and like have me and my fancy iPhone just sitting there and be like, all right, this is the official No Direction axe throwing contest, but only me and James are here.
The No Direction Beyond Invitational.
Yes. You know, actually, Vanessa isn't that far from us.
Like, no.
You could come down and visit for a day and throw axes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like technically Param like is within a Paxton plug drive. Like we can have Param throw axes too.
Yeah, that could be like a fall invitational.
Yeah. It could be like KDE Beyond. Oh my gosh, are all of our Eastern Coast staff like part of the Beyond? I think they all are. Because it's me, James, Param.
Where does everybody live?
I think everybody else is West Coast.
Nerds.
I don't know where the newer people. We have some new No Direction members. For those of you who didn't know, we have Scott DeYoung, we have Nate Wright, and Jess Redekop isn't like super new, but she's been on a bunch of the other shows. So, but she's awesome. I just don't know where she lives in Canada, right? I think she lives in Canada because I vaguely remember saying she played games with Thirst. I have no idea, but I'm gonna go off of the working theory that KDE is currently me, James, Vanessa, and
East Coast, Beast Coast.
Indeed. If you want to hang out with KDE, you can come hang out with us on Discord. You can also check on our website where we have some of the most amazing No Direction blog content that you have ever seen in your lives. We have that you can go to nodirectionpodcast.com to read all of it. Lots of great. Thanks for joining us for No Direction. Until next time, go beyond.